50 years ago today, opening statements began in the so-called Doctor's Trial at Nuremberg. 23 people, including 20 physicians, were charged with murder for conducting barbaric medical experiments on prisoners of the Nazis, most of them Jews.
Between September 1939 and April 1945, all of the defendants herein unlawfully, willfully, and knowingly committed crimes against humanity, in that they were principals in, accessories to, ordered, abetted, took a consenting part in, and were connected with plans and enterprises involving medical experiments without the subject's consent upon German civilians and nationals of other countries, in the course of which experiments the defendants committed murders, brutalities, cruelties, tortures, atrocities, and other inhumane acts.
16 of the defendants were found guilty. 7 were executed. In their decision, the Nuremberg judges included a code of ethics for medical experimentation upon human subjects.
In the November 27th Journal of the American Medical Association, there are a number of articles about that Nuremberg code and the continuing debate on the ethics of experimenting on people. Dr. Ruth Faden writes in the journal about U.S. medical researchers and the Nuremberg trial and code. She is a professor of biomedical ethics and the director of the Bioethics Institute at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Faden, you write in the journal that most U.S. doctors did not consider that the Nuremberg Code was meant for them, that in fact they did not feel they had any need of a code of ethics to cover experiments on people.
The code was perceived as a proper code for barbarians, which is how the Nazis were understood, but had very little relevance to good people, American physicians.
There was a belief in this period and for some years thereafter that if people did participate in medical experiments, that they must have volunteered. But
yes.
In fact, this wasn't true.
Well, that's correct. There was a perception, and this was presented in the public media, that when healthy people volunteered to be subjects of research, these were praiseworthy acts, and they were much discussed and presented as kind of American heroes. At the same time, what was less well understood was the extent to which American hospital patients were used as research subjects without their knowledge or awareness.
That is the question of consent, whether
That's
they
correct.
Had consented.
That's correct.
But beyond the question of consent, and this is something that the Nuremberg Code dealt with at considerable length, is the question of informed consent, that
Correct.
People really do understand what is going to happen, why it's going to happen, and the potential consequences. And that appeared to be a sticking point for many distinguished medical researchers for many years, and in fact it still is. Why?
Oh, absolutely. Well, there are several levels. One is, and it should be emphasized, that the Nuremberg Code was concerned not only with potential subjects being informed, but also that they had an adequate understanding of what was at stake for them and that they were free to refuse, not only initially, but at any point during the research. Each of these conditions of valid consent imposes a burden, if you like, on the experimentation enterprise. These are difficult things to achieve: an adequate disclosure, adequate understanding on the part of a potential subject, and creating a climate in which people truly feel as if they can refuse and also that they can withdraw at any point. It obviously is more efficient from the perspective of the medical enterprise, narrowly understood, to proceed without having to achieve these three elements.
It was not until 1961, all the way to 1961, that any kind of codes were laid down which really did apply to a fair amount of research. And then it was the Army, according to your article, which stipulated that any kind of experimentation or research that was funded by the Army had to meet rigid standards for consent.
There were several efforts operating at the same time. The Army has a very interesting history of having adopted the Nuremberg Code initially in secret, that is the whole Defense Department, and then over a series of years becoming more public in its regulation of human subject research. And today we have what's called the Common Rule, which is a set of regulations that governs all research involving human subjects funded by any branch of the federal government. But I think it's important to emphasize that regulations do not guarantee ethical conduct.
In fact, wasn't this whole process just kind of speeded up by the discovery that human experimentation had been carried on in the United States, that while it may not have been as spectacularly awful as what went on in Nazi Germany, it was pretty awful?
Well, comparisons are always very awkward. It's important, first of all, I think, to say two things. First, that a huge amount of research involving human subjects is conducted in the United States and throughout the world all the time, and that much of this research is innocuous and benign, and we need it to go forward because otherwise medical progress would be impossible. That said, what you've just described is absolutely correct. We have had a series of cases in the United States, which all Americans should very much regret, in which there were clear violations of human rights in the use of human subjects.
For example?
We can begin with the most celebrated such case, which is the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. This is the research that was conducted on African Americans for a long period of time, in which syphilis was allowed to be untreated in these, quote, patients. Recently, I completed a committee investigating the human radiation experiments, in which there, too, there were a series of experiments that involved the injection of plutonium into unknowing medical patients. Basically, at the same time as the Nuremberg medical trials are going on, the United States is engaged in research that clearly failed to satisfy the requirements of the Nuremberg Code.
You know, as I was reading your article, I realized that there is one sort of belief that I share, which you point out in the article, there is no basis for sharing, but that many people believe, and I did, that a doctor would not propose that a patient participate in an experimental treatment unless they had some notion that it would do the patient good.
Right. Often it's the case that in medical research, there is no medical interest to the subject that immediately will be served by that participation, and we need to be straight out about that. So it is not necessary to sort of kind of haze around or dance around the issue of benefit. When there is no reasonable, plausible likelihood that the patient would benefit, treat the person as a research subject, not as a patient. Put the bargain to them squarely. Ask them if they're willing to take on risk in order to advance the common good.
Thank you very much, Dr. Faden.
Thank you.
Ruth Faden is the author of A History and Theory of Informed Consent. We reached her at the Holocaust Museum here in Washington, where she is attending a conference on the Nuremberg Codes.